The Revival of the Church. Chapter 6. Wolsey's machinations to obtain the tiara. One thing only was wanting to check more surely the progress of the gospel: Wolsey's accession to the pontifical throne. Consumed by the desire of reaching the summit of sacerdotal unity, he formed, to attain this end, one of the most perfidious schemes ambition ever engendered. He thought with others, "The end justifies the means." The cardinal could only attain the popedom through the emperor or the king of France. For then, as now, it was the secular powers that really elected the chief of Catholicity. After carefully weighing the influence of these two princes, Wolsey found that the balance inclined to the side of Charles, and his choice was made. A close intimacy of long standing united him to Francis I, but that mattered little. He must betray his friend to gain his friend's rival. But this was no easy matter. Henry was dissatisfied with Charles V. Wolsey was therefore obliged to employ every imaginable delicacy in his maneuvers. First he sent Sir Richard Wingfield to the emperor. Then he wrote a flattering letter in Henry's name to the princess regent of the Low Countries. The difficulty was to get the king to sign it. "Have the goodness to put your name," said Wolsey. "Even if it should annoy you, Highness, you know very well that women like to be pleased." This argument prevailed with the king, who still possessed a spirit of gallantry. Lastly, Wolsey, being named arbitrator between Charles and Francis, resolved to depart for Calais, apparently to hear the complaints of the two princes, but in reality to betray one of them. Wolsey felt as much pleasure in such practices as Francis in giving battle. The King of France rejected his arbitration. He had a sharp eye, and his mother one still sharper. "Your master loves me not," said he to Charles's ambassador, "and I do not love him any more, and am determined to be his enemy." It was impossible to speak more plainly. Far from imitating this frankness, the politic Charles endeavored to gain Wolsey, and Wolsey, who was eager to sell himself, adroitly hinted at what price he might be bought. "If the King of England sides with me," Charles informed the cardinal, "you shall be elected pope at the death of Leo X. Francis, betrayed by Wolsey, abandoned by the pope, and threatened by the emperor, determined at last to accept Henry's mediation. But Charles was now thinking of very different matters. Instead of a mediation, he demanded of the King of England 4,000 of his famous bowmen. Henry smiled as he read the dispatch, and looking at Pace his secretary, and Marny the captain of his guards, he said, "Bibi ca audient et non intelligunt," thus forbidding them to understand, and above all to bruit abroad this strange request. It was agreed to raise the number of archers to 6,000, and the cardinal, having the tiara continually before his eyes, departed to perform at Calais the odious comedy of a hypocritical arbitration. Being detained at Dover by contrary winds, the mediator took advantage of this delay to draw up a list of the 6,000 archers and their captains, not forgetting to insert in it certain obstinate deer, as Henry had said, that must of necessity be hunted down. These were some gentlemen whom the king desired to get rid of. While the ambassadors of the King of France were received at Calais on the 4th of August with great honors by the Lord High Chamberlain of England, the cardinal signed a convention with Charles's ministers that Henry should withdraw his promise of the Princess Mary's hand to the Dauphin and give her to the emperor. At the same time, he issued orders to destroy the French navy and to invade France. And finally, he procured, by way of compensating England for the pension of 16,000 pounds hitherto received from the court of St. Germain's, that the emperor should pay henceforward the annual sum of 40,000 marks. Without ready money, the bargain would not have been a good one. This was not all. While Wolsey was waiting to be elected pope, he conceived the idea of becoming a soldier. A commander was wanted for the 6,000 archers Henry was sending against the King of France. And why should he not be the cardinal himself? He immediately intrigued to get the noblemen set aside who had been proposed as generals-in-chief. "Shrewsbury," he said to the king, "is wanted for Scotland. Worcester, by his experience, is worthy that you should keep him near you. As for Dorset, he will be very dear." Then the priest added, "Sire, if during my sojourn on the other side of the sea, you have good reason to send your archers, I hasten to inform you that whenever the emperor takes the command of his soldiers, I am ready, although an ecclesiastic, to put myself at the head of yours." What devotedness! Wolsey would cause his cross of Cardinal a Lettier to be carried before him, he said, and neither Francis nor Bayard would be able to resist him. To command at the same time the state, the church, and the army, while awaiting the tiara, to surround his head with laurels. Such was this man's ambition. Unfortunately for him, they were not of that opinion at court. The king made the Earl of Essex commander-in-chief. As Wolsey could not be general, he turned to diplomacy. He hastened to Bruges, and as he entered at the emperor's side, a voice was heard above the crowd, exclaiming, "Salve, Rex Regis tuae ac regni suae," a sound most pleasing to his ears. People were very much astonished at Bruges by the intimacy existing between the cardinal and the emperor. "There is some mystery beneath it all," they said. Wolsey desired to place the crown of France on Henry's head, and the tiara on his own. Such was the mystery, which was well worth a few civilities to the mighty Charles V. The alliance was concluded, and the contracting parties agreed to avenge the insults offered to the throne of Jesus Christ, or in other words, to the Popedom. Wolsey, in order to drag Henry into the intrigues which were to procure him the tiara, had reminded him that he was King of France, and the suggestion had been eagerly caught at. At midnight on the 7th of August, the king dictated to his secretary a letter for Wolsey containing this strange expression, "Si abitus para regi locum in regno aegis hereditario, majestas aegis quum tempus erit opportunum, sequitur." The theologian who had corrected the famous Latin book of the kings against Luther most certainly had not revised this phrase. According to Henry, France was his hereditary kingdom, and Wolsey was going to prepare the throne for him. The king could not restrain his joy at the mere idea, and already he surpassed in imagination both Edward III and the Black Prince. "I am about to attain a glory superior to that which my ancestors have gained by so many wars and battles." Wolsey traced out for him the road to his palace on the banks of the Seine. Beziers is about to fall. Afterwards there is only Reims, which is not a strong city, and thus your grace will very easily reach Paris. Henry followed on the map the route he would have to take. "Affairs are going on well," wrote the cardinal. "The Lord be praised." In him this Christian language was a mere official formality. Wolsey was mistaken. Things were going on badly. On the 20th of October 1522, Francis I, whom so much perfidy had been unable to deceive, Francis, ambitious and turbulent, but honest in this matter at least, and confiding in the strength of his arms, had suddenly appeared between Cambrai and Valenciennes. The emperor fled to Flanders in alarm, and Wolsey, instead of putting himself at the head of the army, had shielded himself under his arbitrator's cloak. Writing to Henry, who a fortnight before had by his advice excited Charles to attack France, he said, "I am confident that your virtuous mediation will greatly increase your reputation and honor throughout Christendom." Francis rejected Wolsey's offers, but the object of the latter was attained. The negotiations had gained time for Charles, and bad weather soon stopped the French army. Wolsey returned satisfied to London about the middle of December. It was true that Henry's triumphant entry into Paris became very difficult, but the cardinal was sure of the emperor's favor, and through it, he imagined, of the tiara. Wolsey had done, therefore, what he desired. He had hardly arrived in England when there came news which raised him to the height of happiness. Leo X was dead. His joy surpassed what Henry had felt at the thought of his hereditary kingdom. Protected by the powerful Charles V, to whom he had sacrificed everything, the English cardinal was at last on the point of receiving that pontifical crown which would permit him to crush heresy, and which was, in his eyes, the just reward of so many infamous transactions.